Okay, the recording is working, it looks like. So here we go. I want to talk about a topic this evening that is very dear and close to my heart. It is the topic of Tircha D'Tzibura. Does anyone have any familiarity with the term Tircha D'Tzibura? Has anyone ever heard it thrown around in the past before? Yeah, Toby, yeah. If you were to give a, just a general definition of Tircha D'Tzibura, how would you define it?
Causing grief to the congregation. Causing discomfort to the congregation.
Discomfort to the congregation. What was that, Art?
An annoyance to the congregation.
An annoyance to the congregation. Okay, so doesn't even need to be as intense as giving someone grief. It can even be an annoyance. Can you think of an example? What would be like a classic example? Don't use any names of anyone specific, but in shul, in shul, what would be an example of Tircha D'Tzibura?
Somebody taking twice as long to daven something that it needs to take.
Okay, great. So now this is part of the reason I'm teaching a class now, because I was just on a meeting last night with all of our Bali Tefillah, all the people leading davening on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. We significantly cut down the timing for all the services. And part of what we did was we cut out a lot of the piyutim. We cut out a lot of the additional prayers that got added throughout later in more recent years. Recent within the grand span of Jewish history, recent. That's still not very recent. And one of the suggestions that someone made at the meeting was, he said, you know, I really like this. Maybe we should consider this for the following year as well. And what this brings up is a topic called Tircha D'Tzibura, which is essentially being sensitive to the time of your tzibur, the time of your congregants, which is why I believe this year ends at 9:30, right?
Yes.
Okay, so because it'd be very ironic if I went overtime while giving a shiur about Tircha D'Tzibura.
But we're not so machbid on that. So like if it's...
So that's our topic tonight. Our topic is, can a tzibur, can a congregation be mochel? Can they say, you know what? I'm okay with a breach of Tircha or Kavod. I'm right, okay
so,
with that.
Right. So we don't, it's not really a 45-minute, one-hour shiur. It's, you know, approximately in the 45 to one-hour range. Sometimes, frankly, there can be a 45-minute shiur, which is a Tircha. And there have been ones that have been an hour and 15 minutes where we're like, come on, can you give us more? So,
okay. So hopefully I'll try to gauge that later on, or you could just kick me off when you're ready. Anyway, I am on the CS moderator account, so you don't have the power. Anyway, I was very surprised no one gave the example of the rabbi's sermon going on for 20 minutes, but I appreciate all of you.
That's called Kavod Harav. The reason we didn't, it's called Kavod Harav.
Okay.
That is certainly something amongst the congregation that might be mentioned.
Right. Okay, good. So that if you give me the privilege to come back more times in the future, which I'm sure you will, I have a number of classes on Tircha D'Tzibura. Basically, I spent a lot of COVID-19 while at my apartment in Queens. I spent time delving into this topic. And I wrote actually about a 26, 27-page essay on it in English. I'm still trying to figure out where to publish it. So if anyone has ideas, you'll email me afterwards. Anyway, so I'm going to share the sheet with everyone now, the source material we're going to use. So Tircha D'Tzibura is a term that gets thrown around a lot. Usually it's thrown around by people who are sitting in the back of the shul, and they'll say, yeah, it's Tircha D'Tzibura, let's move on already. And on the other extreme, there are many people who are Talmidei Chachamim, many people who are rabbis, who seem to conduct themselves in a way almost as if they didn't know that there is a concept called Tircha D'Tzibura. So again, let me just define the term one more time. Especially, you'll forgive me, when I researched this topic, I was preparing it for like a more yeshiva-oriented audience, but I'm told the Wednesday night crowd is a very advanced audience, so I'm sure you'll bear with me on this. And so Tircha D'Tzibura, just I'm going to use this a lot without translating, means an imposition on the tzibur, an imposition on the congregation. That means by causing grief, annoyance, the different synonyms and terms that both Art and Toby mentioned. So where does the idea of Tircha D'Tzibura come from? We have to go back to its very origins. So Tircha D'Tzibura, I just want to, if there's one point we walk away with tonight, is to know that Tircha D'Tzibura isn't like Tikkun Olam. It's not just a term that people throw around, but has no halachic significance. Tircha D'Tzibura is a halachic principle. It's a Jewish legal principle, and it has consequences in halachic discourse. Here's a great example of one. Amar Rabbi Abba ben Zutrasi, this is in the Gemara. Amar Rabbi Yehuda bar Zveida. Bikshu Lekvo Parshas Balak Kriya Shema. When the rabbis were figuring out what has to be part of the general Kriya Shema, they said, what did they say? They thought maybe we should put Parshas Balak in there. Add some nice things in there. Vipnei Malo Kavuha. Why did we not put that in? Mishum Torah Tzibor. Because if we made Shema any longer, we were afraid that would be a tircha, be a difficulty, and be an imposition upon the congregation. So right off the bat, looking at one of the original sources in the Gemara to deal with Torah Tzibor / Tircha Tzibor, same term, just one is in Aramaic, one's in Hebrew, we see this idea that even when Chazal were figuring out what is halacha, Tircha Tzibor played a role in figuring out what the baseline halacha is. That's very significant. We would have had Parshas Balak or part of it in Kriya Shema, in the Shema reading every day. But because of Tircha Tzibor, it did not make it into it. That's a very powerful principle there. Also, this is if you've ever looked at this topic before, chances are the next thing we're going to look at is the Gemara that is cited by most people. And this also is very relevant for us because, again, I opened up by saying that this is going to be relevant for the high holidays. So there's a Gemara that talks about high holidays, none other than Yom Kippur in the temple itself. So what happened? What was Yom Kippur like in the temple itself? Thank God we have an entire Masechta, an entire Talmudic tractate dedicated to that called Yoma. So what happened during the day of Yom Kippur? When they were ready for the Torah reading, there's a whole hands-off ceremony. The Chazan HaKnesses knows the Sefer Torah v'nosel l'Rosh HaKnesses, Rosh HaKnesses knows the Skan, v'Skan knows the Kohen Gadol. They pass from one dignitary in the temple to another dignitary in the temple. And once the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, receives the Torah, he would read two sections from the book of Leviticus from Sefer Vayikra. And then when they were ready to read Sefer Bamidbar, there was another parsha to read that was in Sefer Bamidbar in the next book. What do you think they did? I would have said maybe they would roll the Torah, right? You're in one book, you're in Vayikra, you roll to the next book. But no, that's not what happened. Begolas Sefer Torah Umanicha Becheko. The Kohen Gadol would take the Torah, he put it on his lap, Omer. I've already read enough inside. You know what I'm reading from is inside the Torah itself. But when he went to the book of Numbers, to Bamidbar, he would close the Torah up and he would perform Kriyas HaTorah, Torah reading, by heart. Now, can you imagine that being done in shul today? I mean, even if you did know it by heart, do you think any Bal Koreh would be allowed to just close the Torah and read by heart? Or better yet, have you ever seen someone get up to the Bima during Kriyas HaTorah? They take out the art scroll stone Chumash and they read from it? You may have seen that for the Haftorah, but I'm sure someone could tell me. Have you ever seen them do it for Kriyas HaTorah, for Torah reading itself? No, that's preposterous. You have to read from the Torah. That's not halacha. But in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple, they did not have to read the second parsha from the Torah. Why? So if you look in the Gemara, it says, why didn't we do it? Why didn't we not roll? Shengel and Sefer Torah v'tzibor. We do not read this. We do not roll the Sefer Torah in front of the congregation. Mipnei kavod tzibor. Because we are concerned for the dignity of the congregation.
Rabbi?
Now, if anyone's
don't we do that today?
Ah, very good.
We'll take a Sefer Torah. It could be behind, I don't know how many, Parshiot, or it could be behind, two of the Sefarim. It could be from Shmot to Bamidbar, and they'll just roll it or unroll.
Excellent. Everyone should know I make up with Phyllis beforehand to ask all the good questions. That way she could set me up. So great. We're going to get to that actually in just a moment, and we're going to have not one, not two, but three answers to your question, Phyllis. And you'll tell me at the end if none of them satisfy you, all right? So, okay, very good. Phyllis points out correctly that when we're in shul, we never read by heart. In fact, we have a second Sefer Torah with us. And we'll see soon the halacha is that if you only have one Sefer Torah, you're supposed to roll to wherever you need to roll. If you have Maftir in a different Parsha, you roll to wherever Maftir is. So what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash? We'll return to that in a moment, but let's just get a little technical for a second.
Before you go on, wouldn't they have had a second Sefer Torah in the Beis HaMikdash? I mean, they would have had numerous ones.
They would have. So you are correct.
Just had, like we do, like we bring a second Sefer Torah out that's already rolled when it's a special.
Very good. So most of the Mefarshim, very surprisingly from what I've seen, don't actually ask that question. I remember seeing a little bit on it, which is why don't they do it? So I think it's more a matter of telling us the principle of the matter. Not that the Kohen Gadol couldn't have a second Torah on hand, but that he did not require a second Torah or the amount of time that it would take to take out a second Sefer Torah, even was outright and just roll it out and find the place in it, those few seconds itself might constitute Tircha d'Tzibura. And this is a proof actually for how concerned we have to be for Tircha d'Tzibura, that we think, okay, a 20-minute sermon, that's a Tircha d'Tzibura. But if he only goes, you know, let's say, I don't know what the norm is at Agudat Shalom. I came here during COVID-19. But let's just say the norm was a 10-minute sermon, and then I go two minutes overtime to 12 minutes beyond what the norm is. So even just 2 minutes or even a few seconds, that could constitute Tircha d'Tzibura. That's why at shul during Maariv, when we switch the guard between Mincha and Maariv on a regular weeknight over here, I try to get the guy from Maariv up immediately as the guy from Mincha is coming down. Sometimes whoever's there for Mincha, they like to wrap the talis, take a little time. We appreciate that they take the time to wrap the talisim, of course. But meanwhile, the whole tzibur, they're twiddling their thumbs. So that would not be right to the tzibur. So it's important to keep things moving. In fact, actually, I know we don't go to that many weddings these days, but there is a tshuva that, God willing, we'll see if we get to learn more about Tircha d'Tzibur in a later class. The Tircha d'Tzibur is not just limited to shul. It primarily takes place in shul. But let's say you are being Mesader Kiddushin. Let's say I'm officiating over a wedding. If I just bring a sefer with me and I'm reading in there the whole time and I let things go really slowly, that's a Tircha d'Tzibur as well. The Mesader Kiddushin, the officiating rabbi who's under the chuppah, they have to know what they're doing and they have to know how to keep things moving along. Of course, take a moment to give a nice speech, talk about the bride and groom, the family, great. But you have to keep things moving.
Just reading the ketubah is a Tircha d'Tzibur.
Well, the ketubah is necessary because what we have to
do. I understand, but it's still
a Tircha d'Tzibur if you pick the wrong guy.
Oh, okay.
That's why it's very important. You have to pick someone who's confident, who's fluent, and could read Aramaic.
And
same issue with the Tanoim. I was at a wedding recently. The chassan wanted one of his friends to read the Tanoim at the tish. And when he read that document, he was breaking his teeth over the Hebrew on it. Oh. So it's important, A, Tircha d'Tzibur, but B, you should only give people honors that they are comfortable with, because you're doing them a dishonor and a disservice if you give them something that they're not comfortable with.
Yes.
So your point's well taken on that, Phyllis. But what I want to point out here, I apologize for getting technical, but this is really important. Do you notice the discrepancy in terms here between what we saw in the first Gemara versus the second Gemara? In the first Gemara, it uses the term Toreach Tzibur, an imposition on the congregation, Tircha d'Tzibura. Over here, it uses the term Kavod HaTzibur, the dignity of the congregation. So what is this new term called Kavod HaTzibur? And by the way, this will be the second term that I will not be translating consistently. These are the two terms we got to know. Tircha d'Tzibur means an imposition on the congregation. And Kavod HaTzibur means the dignity of the congregation. Okay? Any questions on just making sure that those are demystified terms? Because what we're about to spend all our time doing is demystifying it. So the Ritva actually understands, he very casually thinks that they're interchangeable. He says, V'nir shekach pirshu dach basura tir leglov lo chashu le toreach tzibur. When the Ritva, the medieval commentaries commenting on this passage in the Talmud, he very casually just swaps the word kavod with the term toreach. To him, it sounds like kavod hatzibur and tirad hatzibur are one and the same thing. Why do you not roll the Sefer Torah to the place it needs to get to in front of the congregation? Because tirchad tzibura. Why does he use the word kavod tzibur? Maybe it makes more sense in that context in terms of the connotation, the artistic style, but it's one and the same in terms of the halachic principle. And Rambam does the same thing as well. Rambam, in Mishnah Torah, he also very casually uses v'engolan Sefer Torah b'tzibur mipnei toreach hatzibur. So we see two of the Gedolei Rishon, two of the major medieval rabbinic Talmudists, understood that the idea of the dignity of the congregation and an imposition on the congregation's time are really just, you could think of it almost as Tirchad Tzibura is the negative formulation, and Kavod HaTzibur is the positive formulation, the dignity of the congregation. And when you make an imposition on the congregation's time, that's that compromises the dignity of the congregation, that they are expected to twiddle their thumbs and wait while this one guy is standing up there figuring out what to do. In fact, just getting back to practically what we do in our shul to minimize that, we had this issue come up during COVID-19 as well. The issue came up because we only have one man lane Torah. Only one man reads from the Torah. He gets all the aliyahs, and he's also expected to do hagba, to lift the Torah and roll it and do galila all on his own. So what we started doing Shabbos morning in shul, and we consulted with our medical expert as well, the time is already being used up. There's someone who's just rolling the Torah. It's not like on a weekday. On a weekday when the Torah is being rolled, you have the hirat zones, which takes a little time. But on Shabbos, everyone's literally just staring at the guy. I feel bad almost, like they're imposing pressure on him. Quickly roll up that Torah. And he's, if you don't have any experience, you're fumbling through trying to get the gartel around the Torah. The hardest part is always getting the mantle on and trying to get the Torah up a little bit. If you've ever had that experience, not so easy. So what we do now is we have a very brief 1 to 2 minutes of our Torah, because we don't want people just twiddling their thumbs during that time. We want to give them something useful. So we figured if we have the downtime already, rather than be a tirchad tzibura, why don't we actually respect the kavod tzibur and get a little Torah in there while we're at it?
Rabbi, just for your edification, the 7 o'clock minyan on Shabbos, we do a mishberach lecholim at that point. Be mindful that it was downtime, and and with the different davening we're doing, we said this is something that's been eliminated that really could be here, and it's a perfect opportunity, so we do it there.
Clever.
That's a good idea as well. Clever. And you also avoid any of us rabbis coming in and imposing ourselves on.
I don't want to say that was the main reason, because our rabbis speak on average for 2 minutes on that Shabbos morning, just so you know, for future reference. Probably don't correct me later, please.
All right, good to know. You see, you could pull the wool over my eyes. I wouldn't know. I wouldn't complain about 2 minutes either. But anyway. So, the Minchas Asher, Rav Asher Weiss, among many Achronim, are bothered by something. You see, our rabbis were very smart, and they were also very meticulous. So, when you look in a halacha, you don't find usually, similar in the Torah as well, if you find two different words for the same thing, chances are they don't both mean what you think they mean. Because the rabbis aren't inventing all sorts of random terms. They're not writing some like poem or prose literature where they're trying to use every synonym under the sun to show their mass vocabulary. The rabbis, if they're going to deviate, they're going to use the term kavod hatzibur instead of tirchad tzibura, or tirchad tzibur instead of kavod hatzibur. They can't just be interchangeable. The rabbis wouldn't invent a second term if it didn't mean something else, which leads us to believe that there must be a different meaning to kavod hatzibur than to tirchad tzibura. It's not just that kavod hatzibur is the positive side of the coin of tirchad tzibura, respecting the time of the congregation. There must be something else to it. The zerei bor d'yish kavod tzibur she'eno kasher tirchad tzibura. When you are imposing yourself on the tzibur, when there's tirchad tzibura, that is a lack of kavod hatzibur. but not every breach to kavod hatzibur has to do with necessarily an imposition on the time of the congregation. And I will we're going to spend the rest of the class explaining what that means. And in order to explain what that means, we're going to go back to Phyllis's question in order to get some sense into the matter. All right, you ready, Phyllis? Here we go.
Ready.
Great. So this is your question over here. So the Shulchan Aruch points out, what do we do on a regular Shabbos? Ein golan sefer Torah b'tzibur b'pnei kavod hatzibur. We do not roll the sefer Torah in front of the congregation because of the dignity of the congregation. So in our shul, we have gabayim who are very dedicated and they make sure that the Torahs are rolled to the right place before the time that they are needed. Vim ein lehem ela sefer Torah echad. Let's say you only have one sefer Torah in shul and you have to read a maftir, an additional parsha. Vehem tzrich likros b'shnei in yanim. And you have to read two different things. What's the halacha? That we roll the Torah and it pushes off, it supersedes the kavod hatzibur, the dignity of the congregation. So I have a question. Right. So let me bring it out to question, which I think is what you're getting to, Phyllis, which is, wait a minute. You mean to tell me in a regular shul, on a typical Shabbos, if they need to roll the Sefer Torah, they could do it even if it's going to be a Tircha Tzibura. But in the Beis HaMikdash, on Yom Kippur, the Kohen Gadol is not able to roll the Torah? I would think that'd be the one day, the one place, the one time the entire year that we're going to be able to say, you know what, what's an extra few seconds of davening, extra few seconds of waiting around? That would be the day that we wouldn't care about it. It's almost the opposite of what I would have intuited. Why is in the Beis HaMikdash, we say, it's okay, the Kohen doesn't have to read the rest of it inside. Don't roll the Torah. Don't impose time on the congregation. But meanwhile, any other place, any other time of year, we do impose the time on the congregation. That is a huge stira, a huge contradiction, which is really hard to make sense of. And to that, we have three answers. And the third answer is going to be very relevant for our understanding of Tircha Tzibura. So answer number one, we'll go relatively quickly through the first two. The first one is the Ritva. The Ritva says that when it comes to regular Torah reading on a Shabbos, what is going on there if I put on my halachic goggles, what am I seeing? I am seeing a bona fide mitzvah of Torah reading taking place. There is a mitzvah to read Torah on Shabbos, and that mitzvah of Torah reading is being fulfilled when we lay. But what's going on in the Beis HaMikdash? In the Beis HaMikdash on Yom Kippur, there's no obligation to read the parshios of Yom HaKippurim that day. Rather, what is going on? Eino ela kemagid avodas hayom. Rather, there's no inherent obligation of Torah reading on the Yom Kippur day there. But rather, what's the nature of the obligation? There really is no obligation. The Kohen is more just, for lack of a better term, adding flavor to the day by reading. Because what's Kriyas HaTorah? Kriyas HaTorah today has really devolved for many of us. And it's really just become a time where we try to distract ourselves or read through the footnotes of the art scroll trying to, you know, pass the time. But back in the day, the way Kriyas HaTorah worked was that was like a weekly learning session for Torah. So what was going on in Yom Kippur was the Kohen Gadol, by reading the Torah, that is seen almost as an explanation of what's going on in the temple on that day. But because there's no inherent mitzvah to read the Torah, it's just to inform the congregation. He doesn't need to read it directly from the Torah. You see, in theory, you could have read from an art scroll chumash. They just didn't have art scroll chumashim back then. Back then, if you were going to spend the time writing a chumash, you were going to write a sefer Torah. But in theory, he could have just as well read it from any other book, any other manuscript that would have had the Torah on it. That's why he's able to read the rest of it by heart, because there is no inherent obligation on that day.
It almost seems obvious that the Kohen Gadol's role in Yom Kippur in the Beis HaMikdash was not reading Torah, it was the Avodah. the long service of the avoda. So reading Torah is probably just an extra.
Well, so it sounds like you're very compelled by the Rifa's approach, but I'll tell you something, by the fact that there's at least two other answers we're going to see here, and I'm sure more that I haven't seen myself, but I'm sure they exist, means that since others do not give this answer, they understand that the obligation to read Torah on that day is of a bona fide halachic nature. So here's another approach by the Avnei Nezer. The Avnei Nezer, he says there is an obligation on the day of Yom Kippur, but unlike the rest of the Torah readings, like let's say on a typical Shabbos, which the obligation is incumbent upon the community to have a community fulfill their communal obligation of reading the Torah. When it comes to Yom Kippur, there is an obligation to read the Torah, but it's not a chovas hatzibor, it's a chovas hayachid. It's the individual obligation of the Kohen. Therefore, it wouldn't be appropriate for the sake of the Kohen to fulfill his individual obligation of reading Torah, and he's, you know, we're being nice to him and providing a minyan that he should have to make us wait so he can fulfill his own obligation. Whereas any other reading that goes on the rest of the year on Shabbos, we understand that it's a communal obligation to read the Torah. Therefore, the community should be okay with spending a little more time so they could fulfill their own obligation. That's the answer of the Avnei Nezer. And just a quick little tidbit on here, which could be another class and another time. There is a question in general, do I have to stay in for Torah reading? Or am I allowed to read another book during Torah reading? So I'll just, right? Is this something we've thought about before?
No.
Okay, well, it's something I have. So I guess maybe I'm just surprised. Crazy. I'm the only guy who wants to read something else during Torah reading. Okay.
Oh.
So, right, so if we bring another sefer with us, let's say you already were Mavir Sedra, you already did Shnai Mikra during the week, and you want to read something else during laning, are you allowed to do that? So yeah. I'm not going to give you Lemaisa exactly what to do yet, but I'll just tell you halachically, I'll take the questions in a second, I'll just finish the thought.
I don't think you're obligated to hear it though, right?
So let me answer that. Who's obligated? Is it every individual obligated in it, or is the community obligated in it?
I think it's the community because, you know, like when my cousin couldn't make it to shul, I asked him, is it a problem with you not hearing the Torah reading? He said, no.
Right. So this is a difference. Most, aside for like the Bir Halakha, the Baal Meor and many others understand that when it comes to, let's say, Megillah reading for Purim, that's an individual obligation. That's why everyone comes out of the woodworks and comes to Megillah reading on Purim, not just so they could, you know, make noise and their groggers and their cap guns. It's not just for the experience, but because there's an individual obligation. But regular Torah reading is a communal obligation. So as long as in your community, in your shul, there are 10 men who are in there and Torah reading is being recited while they are all listening to it, the community fulfills its communal obligation of Torah reading, which has many different implications. But my point over here is that the Avnei Nezer assumes that Torah reading is a communal obligation, and that's why he's able to say that on Yom Kippur, it's only an individual obligation of the Kohen, and that's why it can't impose on the Tzibor's time.
I don't agree
with
that.
I think Toby had a question.
I don't like that at all.
Yeah, my question is, if that's the case with regard to regular weekly Torah reading, then why are we always, I've always been told that I'm not allowed to stand up and be davening to catch up
with
the davening
reading is going on.
I've got to wait till it's over.
Right.
So how can I be sitting reading a book?
Right.
Or doing anything?
So the answer to your question is that somehow in normative halacha, the Chafetz Chaim, who's the author of the Bir Halacha, the author of the Mishnah Berurah, has become accepted by many people as normative opinion. The Mishnah Berurah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, I think he's actually a minority opinion in this topic, but we've accepted him that Torah reading is an individual obligation. But here's the thing, that if you really want to take it to its logical extreme, that means that at very least, you know, at very least for the men, That means every man needs to stay for Torah reading. And that means if you need a bathroom break, you have to get to the bathroom in between aliyos and get back in before that Misha Berach is done before the next aliyah. I see a lot of men that are not makbid on it. Now, just because people are not makbid on it doesn't mean that they're right. There's a lot of things that we're not, that many people are not makbid on, which are actual bona fide halacha. That is true. Can't say put chazi for that. My point is that I just want to put it out there, you know, Rabbi Cohen is a posek for our community. I am not. I'm just teaching a class. And when I teach classes, I like to show that there are two sides of different issues, even if ultimately we practice according to one way, right? When we talk about kitnios on Pesach, we say, oh, okay, Ashkenazim don't eat kitnios, Sfarim do eat kitnios. But just because I present two different sides doesn't mean that we don't ultimately practice one way or the other. So that's why I want to bring this to your attention. But of course, always consult your local modern Orthodox rabbi.
Rabbi, I don't want to rain on anybody's parade here, but let me just throw in a couple of things now that I've just joined.
Hyman, welcome.
Thank you so much. But here are a couple of points to understand here, which is, first of all, with respect to Chovas Tzibur, Chovas Gavra, it's pretty clear that Klal Yisrael believes it is a Chovas Chibur. It's a public obligation, not on any individuals. I don't know what anyone has been taught here, but if it were otherwise, you would actually have to go and listen to all the Torah readings that you missed between Parshas Kisisa and whenever Shul opened again. Because if it were your obligation and you didn't hear it, you would have to do it. There are people who have done that. Rabbi Jeremy Reeder, by the way, has done that for his Tzibur and Kinek. He's read every Parsha between a couple of weeks ago. I know this because I was in his shir during this time. But beyond this, one point you should understand is that the Rav, which I told Rabbi Weider, the Rav thought that the Kohen Gadol's obligation on Yom Kippur, in fact, was D'oraisa. And I can, if you have there's a book called Shir HaRav on Tefillah and Kriya Shema, which actually talks about Kriya Torah. The Rav thought that it was a chiyuv of the oraisa of the Kohen to read the Torah on Yom Kippur. Why this was exactly so is not exactly clear. Rabbi Ganak put this sefer out based on Shurim that he heard from the Rav. But why the Rav thought this isn't entirely clear. It was basically because of Mikra. I can't remember now anymore.
All right, we'll have to get a supplemental shear on this.
I'll send you the sources on this.
I appreciate that, Hyman. So you're agreeing with the statement I'm making that many people have accepted the Mishnah Berurah's understanding or Be'er Halacha's understanding that it's an individual obligation. But if you look at the vast literature on the topic, it seems the majority of the opinion is the opposite.
I don't think that anyone thinks it's an individual obligation.
The Be'er Halacha says it explicitly.
I think the practice in class is exactly the opposite. That it's a chovas tzibur, not a chovas yachid at all.
Apparently, at Agudah Shalom, we have congregants or presidents like Toby who are very mocked.
Yeah, just before you came on. I was speaking out that if that were the case, why are we not allowed to stand in Davin?
I've always been told you're not. First of all, you are, and secondly, there are Gemaras about Rav Yosef. You have to take a look. Are you aware of the Gemara with Rav Yosef? Rav Yosef, when the Kriyas HaTorah was going on, Rav Yosef says, "They're going to do their thing. I'm doing my thing." And he goes and learns to the side. There's a whole panoply of Gemaras dealing with that issue. And the bottom line is that no one other than a Brisker thinks that there is a Chovas Yachid for a person to hear the Torah reading every week. It's always the general psak in Klal Yisrael is that it is a public obligation and that if the public is reading. I can send you all kinds of stuff on this.
I totally agree. There's a very excellent piece in the Chavetz Chasharon that gives a great outline as well. So for sure, Hyman, I'm 100% with you, and I appreciate you bringing the clarification. And please send me the Rubs approach. It sounds very fascinating.
I will send all this stuff, but there's an entirely different side to this story. But the bottom line that I'm making is that I think no one agrees that no one thinks that it's a psak, that it's a chovas yachid.
Again, I agree with you on all that up to that
didn't
point.
Didn't you just say briskers think that it is? Didn't you just say that?
No, I said it is not a chovas yachid. It's a chovas tzibor. The congregation, and there's a load of sources to support
right.
this.
So, Hyman, I'm with you on that. I agree. The vast majority, if you look at the literature, assumes it's a chovas tzibor. The Beer Halacha, I've seen it inside, says it writes that it's a chovas yachid. It's a minority opinion, but it seems, I think that is the reason, because the Mishnah Berurah himself, Chafetz Chaim, wrote that, and in many from communities, what the Mishnah Berurah writes becomes norm of opinion. I think that's where that belief latched on. But anyway, that was all in the footnote. This was all in the footnote, everyone. So I want to just get us back on track. It was a good footnote, but let's just get back to our feature presentation, which is Tircha Netzibura. So the Magen Avraham, this is going to be our third and final answer to reconciling what went on in the Beis HaMikdash in the temple with what goes on a regular basis inside our shuls.
Can I just say something in support of what Toby said? And, you know, I'm probably older than most of the people here, and I grew up in a shul, in an Orthodox shul, and I was told it is disrespectful to do anything else while the Torah is being read.
Right. So
period. End of story. No davening, no reading books, no doing anything else. It's disrespectful. Period. End of story.
Right. And again, many of the Achronim will support you on the disrespectful angle, Mishnah Berurah for sure. Okay.
I've seen plenty of people davening during Torah reading. I try to avoid it, but I see a lot, and I guess I
don't care what I see. I care.
No, I'm just telling you. I mean, it's, I try to avoid it. But.
Okay, that's great. Okay, wonderful. And definitely, I think like a number of you pointed out, and Hyman pointed out as well, this topic deserves its own separate shiur. I'm glad we got to touch on it, and I'm glad this is of interest. God willing, either Hyman or myself, I'm sure, could put something together for a future class, since this seems to be a very, very popular topic. I'm happy to do that.
You.
The final answer to our question is, the Magen Avraham says, what went on in the Beis HaMikdash that was different than what goes on in a regular Shabbos, in a regular shul, in a regular neighborhood, etc. He says, "V'tzorach lomar the b'shlam of a mikdash how you call Yisrael when the Beis HaMikdash had Yom Kippur, all of the Jewish people were present there." Does that mean literally? No, but it means essentially the Jewish people, if they were somewhere, they were at the Beis HaMikdash at that moment. V'lo machlu, and they would not forgive, they would not forgo their honor, their dignity, their time in that instance. Masha'en came to Beis HaKnesses. What goes on in the Beis HaKnesses? So here's the three factors that I want to point out. Number one, there are less people in the Beis HaKnesses, there are less people in shul than there are at the temple. Umistama, this is a very mistama, presumably, and I think this is a very lefianias dieti, my humble opinion, this is a certain presumption that I'm not sure if I agree with. Mochlin al kavodam, the people in a regular shul on a regular week are willing to forgo, they're willing to forgo the amount of time spent rolling the Torah, where in order to fulfill reading Maftir on Shabbos or reading additional readings on Yom Tov, because it's a Takanas Ga'onim, since it was instituted by the Ga'onim. But in the Beis HaMikdash, where all the Jewish people are present, we do not presume that they were willing to be mochel, to forgive the Tircha Netzibura, the amount of time that was imposed upon them. So I'll just tell you the problem here, again, is that why would you say in the Beis HaMikdash they would not forgo the imposition on their time, but in a regular shul, they would forgive the imposition on their time? Because, I don't know, I've been to a number of shuls where people don't like impositions on their time, even though they don't comprise even 1% of the entire Jewish people. I'm not sure why numbers should make a difference over here. If you're the type of person who's showing up to the temple, you're that devoted to God, chances are you don't care if an extra few seconds are spent to do everything kadasuk din, to do it the best way possible. So I don't really understand the metzias, the facts on the ground of the Magen Avraham's assumption, but the principle that we will be extracting from this Magen Avraham that's important is that he says, mistama mochlin al kavona. Presumably, the tzibor, the congregation, is able to forgive, it's able to forgo an imposition on their time. This assumption is a subject of huge controversy among the achronim, among the nosei kelim, that we'll find in the Shulchan Aruch. Am I allowed, is a tzibor, is a congregation allowed to forgo an imposition on them, or not just an imposition on them, but here, remember, what's the term being used here? Not tircha tziburah, but notice, use the term kvodam, their dignity. Can the tzibor be mochel, an imposition on their dignity? That is the question that we are dealing with here. And this is what I want to stress. Kavod, dignity, as we're about to see, is complete, not completely, but is different. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with tircha tzibur, with time. It can be a different idea altogether. I'm looking at the time. I realize we're not going to get through all this, and I don't want to rush through all the material either. So I think what we'll do is I'll go a little bit further just to open up this topic, but we're essentially halfway through the class. So I'll talk with Howard. Maybe next time he needs me to fill in, we'll do a part two. But let me begin to open up the next part, the second half of the class. And the second half of the class is dealing with the question, can a tzibor, can a congregation forgo, I'm trying to find a good English word for it, can they forgo a breach of dignity? So the Beis Yosef, quoting the Rambam, deals with the case of a child who is 13, is bar mitzvah, but shelo nismalei zkeno, that he doesn't yet look mature. He hasn't grown sufficient hair. He doesn't look mature. And the psak halacha, the ruling is that this kid, even though he technically, age-wise, halachically meets the requirements to lead davening, to serve as a chaz, as a shliat tzibor, he is not allowed to lead shliat tzibor. He's not allowed to be shliat tzibor to lead the Shemona Esrei, to lead on behalf of the people, because that is viewed as a breach of dignity. So there's actually a machlokis ha-Rambam and the Rush, according to Beis Yosef. The Rambam believes, sherishus b'yadam, that there's rishus, that if they want to say, you know what, look, this kid needs to get a chance to become fluent in Hebrew, he needs a chance to get over the stage fright, we should put him up there, well, I couldn't care less, I just brought my own reading material to davening anyway, I couldn't care who's leading anyway, so let's put the kid up there. Rambam says, if the congregation is okay with a kid leading davening, there's no reason they can't have a kid leading davening. And the whereas the Rush, he assumes that you're not allowed to. No, if there is a breach in dignity to the congregation, they have no right to forgo a breach of dignity to themselves. He says that he's lenient in the sense that he says that a child could lead every now and then. He just can't be the established chazan of the congregation. But he's not lenient in the sense that if you wanted to establish a child as the chazan of the cantor for the congregation, you would not be allowed to give him that official position, give him that regular role. So I just want to set the groundwork for next time, whenever next time is going to be, because again, I don't want to rush through this. There's so much good material to mine here. Right now, what we're going to delve into, God willing, next time we're together, is that there is going to be a lot of debate as to whether a congregation is allowed to forgo a breach of dignity to themselves. The example we're primarily looking at is about letting a child who just barely fits the quota of bar mitzvah and does not look mature enough, does not look adult-like to lead. But also, there will be a source that we'll look at a little later on, which can anyone think of another instance of where there is a breach of kavod hatzibor, and therefore we don't let a specific demographic of people do something? did I see a bunch of smiles
over
here?
It happens on Simchas Torah.
Simchas Torah, okay, what are you thinking of? I haven't been at the Shul Simchas Torah yet.
The Tircha Detzibur or the Kavod Hatzibur.
Okay, well, okay, definitely I'm with you. There have been places that there's issues with Tircha Detzibur and Simchas Torah, no question about that. Something to work on maybe for COVID-19. I'll put that on the docket. But something I'm thinking about is the classic passage in Maseches Megillah, where we are told that what is the reason that a woman does not lane? A woman is technically allowed to lane Torah as well. She's allowed to read for the Torah. But why doesn't she go up? Why can't
she lane? Not to embarrass the man.
Because, well, that's what's the terminology, though? Kavod
HaTzibor.
Exactly. Thank you.
And who's the Tzibor? It's men.
Right. So right here, as Hyman quoted to us, and it's from the Maseches Megillah, according to Septa, Mipnei Kavod HaTzibor. The Chachamim said, Ishul HaTikra B'Torah Mipnei Kavod HaTzibor. A woman does not leave because of Kavod HaTzibor. So what we're going to do, God willing, next time is we're going to talk about whether a congregation can forgo and allow a child to lead davening. And based on the reasons why yes and why not, we might get some inkling to understand whether a congregation could also say, you know what, we're okay with a woman leading, not leading davening, but laning and reading and doing Kriyas HaTorah. So that's just to whet our appetites for what God willing will cover next time. But of course, as you can see, there's many more sources to cover. And I think we're about halfway through the material. So I'll end here just so we could have more of a clean cut between part one and part two. And I'll take any questions or comments that we have at this point before we conclude.
I'm very distressed.
Oh, that's not good to hear. Is it a tircha?
I just find it very difficult to accept this, the concept.
Which one?
Tircha.
The general idea of Tircha and Tzibur.
Yeah, with rolling the Torah. I mean, what do you come to shul for? You come to shul so that you can read a book while the Torah is being read? So you can do, you know, play some game, sit there and play chess while the Torah? Come on, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. I'm sorry, then stay home.
Emily, no
one's
coming to hear the rabbi. You know that.
But for us, it's a slippery slope.
Yeah,
and you say, okay, so we'll roll the Torah. It takes a minute. It takes 2 minutes. At what point is it? I think this is an example saying they were so sensitive to the smallest amount of a Homer. We shouldn't be speaking a rabbi on an average Shabbos. I'll be very blatant. Shouldn't speak 40 minutes.
That's a tircha.
Okay, yes. So then maybe a baal tefillah schlepping out kedusha for 35 minutes.
Yes, that's a tircha too. But reading the Torah is not a tircha to me.
But the point is, we can just take that and keep sliding it back. Well, 25 minutes.
I just think it's a bad example to use to explain Tircha and Kavod HaTzibor. There are better examples to me.
By the way, Rabbi, I would think that another way of defining Kavod is the more traditional, which is honor, not necessarily yeah. Dignity. Dignity, I think, fits more being the flip of the tircha, whereas honor is, if I don't give honor, it doesn't mean that I have imposed upon them. I just missed an opportunity to give honor.
Ah, okay. So this is why.
Whereas dignity is, if I'm not giving, if there's no dignity there, then perhaps I have crossed over to someone where I shouldn't be. Whereas just failing to give, it's an opportunity to give honor to this, to the entire assembly, so to speak. Or to not give honor. Okay, it's better to give honor.
Dignity is more of a
remove the dignity, right? If I'm taking away the dignity of it, yeah, now I'm somewhere in the range of what imposition, creating a hardship, whatever it is, however you want to use for tircha.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see what you're saying. I'll have to think if there's if the halachic sources. I think the halachic sources that we're dealing with, when they say Kavod HaTzibor, they mean really the dignity. They don't talk about giving honors to the Tzibor, more just when there's an imposition, when an entire Tzibor has to sit and twiddle their thumbs for one guy, that's against the Kavod HaTzibor. I'll give an example in a future class that we may cover, which is, let's say you are the Kohen, you have one Kohen in Shul, and he's in the middle of Shemona Esrei. The Shul, he came in late, or he just has a lot of Kavana, and the shul is up to Kriyas HaTorah. It's a regular weekday morning. Do you wait for that Kohen to finish the Shemona Esrei so you could call him up for an aliyah? Or do you just move forward without the Kohen? So the Rashba in his Teshuvos says that no, we do not wait for the Kohen because there's ain't Tircha Tzibur Gedola Mizu. You have literally just one person holding back an entire Tzibur, an entire congregation. That's not right. That's the very definition of Tircha Tzibur.
That's another story, yeah. That's
okay, so that, I just want to say, based on the additional, if you look through the literature, my sense, my intuition is that based especially now you sharpening the terminologies for us, I think Kavodat Tzibur usually refers to the dignity of the Tzibur, but now that you use the term honor, I'll try to keep my eye out and see if there's any instances where they mean honor when they say Kavodat Tzibur. Okay, but thank you for bringing
and
up
you
that
you could
distinction.
Also look at respect.
Respect is another
one, yep. Obviously, also giving respect. It's right. Not a question of respecting, because if you're not respecting, you're disrespecting. But
right.
So I don't mean it in that definition, but I mean giving giving respect.
Giving positive as opposed to avoiding negative.
You always right? say, so you
I
always
can
say
give respect, or I can be neutral. I can be parvad it, right? Mm-hmm. Or I could give respect.
You always say kavod hametz.
Right.
And it means
right.
respect or dignity. Of
there, you're right. So, that's a good example to support what Howard is saying, that there are, when kavod hames, there is kavod, right? When you eulogize and you do different things, that's honoring the dead. But also it means
dignified.
Kavod hames also can mean, you know, not doing nevil hames, not doing
dignifying.
The lack of dignity to the body. So yeah. Right over there, you see that distinct, you see both active a little bit more. Very good. What we'll talk about next time is that actually kavod hatzibur doesn't always mean just kavod of the congregants themselves, but I, you know, I'm going to give you a little spoiler alert here, so you close your ears, you don't want to hear the spoiler. Sometimes kavod hatzibur might actually mean the honor of God himself, and figuring out when kavod hatzibur refers to the people alone or when it refers to an objective infringement on God's own honor, that's something that we're going to parse out, God willing, when we meet. Whenever Howard tells me is the next time we'll be here. So anyway, speaking of being respectful and the dignity and the Tircha Tzibur and all that stuff, I realize we're approaching an hour. It's 9:27, and I would like to make sure everyone gets a good night's sleep. And we'll continue next time whenever that is. And if you have any questions in the interim, you can always contact me or just save it for next year and we'll tackle it then.
The extra time was not a Tircha.
No. Okay.
Thank
so
you.
We'll see if you can be mochel on that.
Thank you so much.
All right. Have a great night, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Thank you, Rabbi. And by everybody, we're going to be, it'll be in the announcements next week, but we're going to move back to 8 o'clock for our start time, and that'll continue right through till we change the clocks in the spring, because it's